So I am an ornithologist, but I'm also a co-PI on the Lepidoptera atoll. So actually, this is my third ESA, so I'm not a total outsider. So I wanted to thank Joshua and John for inviting us to be part of this symposium. The title that I gave was From Monographs to Portals, but actually, the way that this talk is structured is I'm going to start by talking a little bit about the Encyclopedia of Life project, the portal that we have been developing in the past year. Then I'll talk a little bit more about our interactions with various publishers of monographs and talk about how we're bringing that information into the Encyclopedia of Life. And then I'll go back to the portal approach. In general, I have two main conclusions that I want to give up front, and one of those is that there's going to be very many different ways to get information online about species. And then the second point is that I think that it's vital for us to work with the publishers of these traditional media to ease the process of moving data from the paper format to the digital format. And so, as you may know, the Encyclopedia of Life has a mission, which is to put on the web information about all 1.8 validly described species of organisms on Earth. And this particular effort was initiated by E.O. Wilson in a paper in TREE in 2003, but of course it's not the first time this kind of thing has been proposed, okay? There's been many other efforts that have done at least part of the Tree of Life or have tackled the entire Tree of Life. This is just the next iteration. And what's important about this particular effort is that the timing is right, primarily because of technology. So this is just a tag cloud of a lot of the concepts that have gone into making the EOL, the project that it is today. And essentially, it's now easier than ever to link up databases. So all of those prior efforts to build pages for lots of species on the web we're now able to link those together easier than we could do before. And the other thing is that's emerged is a lot of social technology, which has produced ways for people to collaborate online to do this kind of community-oriented effort of bringing information together. So the status is that in February we launched the very first version of the portal. It had about 30,000 pages, most of them were fish. It also had about 1 million pages, which essentially had the name of the organism from the Catalog of Life. And so we're now working to build out the rest of the page for each of those organisms, and hopefully next month or early January we will be up to about 70,000 pages. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about how we're doing that. It's basically going to be, in the future, a partnership between the scientific community and the general public. So the role of the science community is to assemble the information that's out there and known to scientists. And for the moment, that has been a matter of partnering with these large databases that already have a lot of this information online. So we're starting with those because the information is already digital, and it's a matter of negotiating and making agreements to share data back and forth. But increasingly, we're going to start relying on the scientific community to do quality assurance on the information that will be coming in from the general public. We're pretty sure that we're not going to get to 1.8 million species relying just on the scientific community alone to enter the data for us. We know that everybody has a lot of work on their plate, so we're not expecting everybody to suddenly drop what they're doing and start building pages out. So we're going to rely on the efforts of the general public to submit photos, to write text, sort of like Wikipedia. The difference is that we will have a network of curators, people who have given us their actual name and some credentials, and they will screen this information and basically authenticate what's been provided. I'm not going to say a whole lot more about the plan for the curator network. There's a document up on the EOL website that I invite all of you to take a look at and provide feedback on. This is the initial part of the plan. If you go to the EOL.org website and go to the Help Us Build link, you can actually access this document and provide feedback. But we basically expect this to be a community-driven process. So I've laid out my thoughts and had a number of people review those thoughts, but we really are hoping that this will grow organically. one thing about the general public that some of you I know are participating in, because it's not just the general public that's doing this, we have opened up a Flickr group for submissions, and there's about 300 people who've become members of this online photo sharing site, Flickr.com, and have made their images available to us. So we're up to almost 9,000 images, and it's only been about a month and a half. So we think that this is going to escalate as time goes on. But those images will come in as unvetted or unauthenticated, and we'll need to have some experts make sure that they are what they say they are. Okay, so just a brief description of why make the EOL? Who's going to use this information? We're aiming this at a very broad audience, but the ones I want to highlight right now are taxonomists who need to access literature as they're describing new species. They need to know what's already been described, and a lot of that information is currently hard to find. And I'll talk a little bit later about how we're making that literature more accessible. And I also want to stress that the EOL will be a place where researchers can share their results widely. Now, they could share it with each other. It may be easier to point people to a central website for all the information that they have, all the publications that they've done. But it also may be a way to share with the general public, but also with themselves. In the long term, it may be easier for you to find your own information on a well-funded long-term project than on those floppy disks that somebody mentioned earlier that are in a format that you can't even read anymore. So I do want to encourage that there could be some self-interest here in making your data available this way. And then also, we're hoping to provide a one-stop shop. So ecologists, and I've done some food web modeling myself, who may want to gather together natural history information across a wide range of taxa, will have a hard time doing it now because that data exists in many different places, and you have to go to a lot of different systems to gather that data. And then the other general audiences we are aiming for, but we recognize that we need to aim for the scientific community as our primary audience at first, because that's where the information is going to come from. So we need to make sure that we engage the scientists. Okay, so what exactly kind of information am I talking about? This is a sample species page. It's one of our exemplar pages, so we made a special effort to build it out to be as rich as possible to illustrate the kinds of information that we're looking for. Obviously, richly illustrated, some information on classification. This is just a sample, actually, from a fungus of the kinds of information that we will serve on these species pages. So it ranges from everything from a physical or morphological description to things like ethnobotany or how to grow. And this is basically determined by our partners. So basically, if they have information relevant to a species, we are happy to fit it into the page someplace. Another important thing is these specialist project links are the links that are going to external data sources. Each one of these is considered a different data object. We may get more than one description of life history from different projects, but each one of those will be credited to the original source of the data with a link and with the names and organizations that produce that information. So we're doing our best to provide attribution everywhere we possibly can, and also we'll provide a way to report the statistics. And Brian Fisher can tell you, he's one of our partners, AntWeb is, and we're already providing statistics on how the pages of information that we're getting from AntWeb are being used by people on our site. Another thing that I want to mention is AmphibiaWeb, one of our other partners, has reported to us that in the month that they first made their information available through the Encyclopedia of Life, their direct traffic doubled and has continued to remain high. So the idea is that EOL becomes a discovery mechanism, and people find the information on the EOL because it's got a high profile, or they're just exploring around, and then they discover a good resource and then spend a lot of time on that resource. Okay, also on the pages are rich sets of maps. We're getting all of our occurrence data, our point maps, from GBIF right now. So any of you who have databases of specimen information, we're encouraging submission of that data to GBIF, and that's where we get it from. And then also we'll continue to add richer multimedia such as video. Okay, a key component of most of our species pages, actually more pages right now than otherwise, are the efforts of our scanning and digitization group. This is the Biodiversity Heritage Library, which is a consortium of, I think, 10 different institutions around the world that are busy scanning and digitizing and indexing and linking those pages to our species pages. And so we're already hearing from people that this is making it a lot easier for people to access the legacy literature, the original species descriptions. And all of this is open access. So primarily right now we're focusing on the pre-1923 literature, but we're also making agreements with other publishers to look at their catalogs more recent than that and make that information accessible. So these stats are, I think, 2 months out of date, so they're probably higher than that. But there's over 8 million pages of literature digitized and now made available on the Encyclopedia of Life website. And there's just basically a high throughput process where they're scanning entire runs of journals. And we're also looking for assistance prioritizing. So if any of your projects have bibliographies that you'd be interested in having us digitize, we just need to know what those references are and we'll track them down and scan them. But the future plans, I think, are very much of interest to this symposium. One of them is that we want to extract information from those digitized pages and actually put it on the species page proper. Right now, there's a link to a page. You can follow that link, and you can go to the PDF of the original or the image of the original page. But we'd like to pull out the relevant information and put it in along with all the other aggregated data. Because in many cases, that may be the only information we have about an organism if it's not been studied since it was originally described. But the other plan that we're starting to talk about is building a YouTube-style repository for articles. So a lot of projects are already scanning those articles that are of interest to their community and putting them online. Now, the status, the licensing status, the copyright status is somewhat questionable with that, but YouTube has solved this basically by having a safe harbor policy, which is that they'll allow it to go online, but if there is a complaint, they will take it down. And so we're considering offering this kind of service that would be somewhat separate from the Encyclopedia of Life, but would provide a place for projects to store all of these PDFs of the literature that's important to them. So other than that, all of this effort is actually without very little burden on the individual researchers. So it's a very automated process, and the Heritage Library is paying for the people who are doing the scanning. So we're not asking anything of the scientific community for this. But now I want to shift to sort of how do you get to those published papers in the first place, and how we're working with publishers to improve the access to those publications. So one way to publish a monograph is to do a lot of collecting of organisms and then spend a lot of time examining them and describing them and conducting the research that is what the scientific community does. And that often involves building a database or a spreadsheet or some digital means of organizing all this data. And then from that database, a paper is produced. And it may be a monograph, it may be a shorter paper. In some cases, that's where the process ends. The best thing for us to do would be to try to get access to that database and extract the information from the database and put it directly in the Encyclopedia of Life pages. So that's ideal. It doesn't actually require a lot from researchers, but it might be too much of a burden for some people who don't have the expertise or don't know how to connect a database or put it online. Or maybe there was no database to start with. So we're not always going to have this ideal situation, and it may be too much of a burden on researchers. So let's think about how these descriptive papers are published. This is a slide from Lubo Penev, who's here in the audience from Zokies. And so this is what a typical article might look like in a traditional journal. And each part of this could be extracted and stored in these new databases that now exist to manage that information. And so we're working with publishers like Zokies to come up with a way to mark up those actual publications so that the information can be routed to the Encyclopedia of Life and other databases and published there. So this is sort of the workflow. And in this model, the journal adds the markup. So basically, there's no additional burden on authors. They're doing just the same thing they would do anyway. And the result is that the marked up data gets to Encyclopedia of Life, which then standardizes the format, indexes it, and then displays it with links back to the original publication and full citations and all that good stuff. So that's one way. We're also working with PLOTSI.org, which has a slightly different model. And in PLOTSI, they're actually taking the journal's version of the publication, and then they're adding markup themselves using a program called GoldenGate. And then they can transform TaxonX, this syntax for marking up the document, into the TADWG species profile model, which is the standard that we're using for EOL species pages. And then they can provide the data to us, where then again we can display it. Now, we haven't gotten all the way through this workflow yet. We're still working on that, but we've made it already through what I think are the hardest parts of the technology. Now, this removes the burden from the publisher. Okay, the journal no longer has to do the markup, but it does still have a burden. People at PLOTSI have to do the markup. And so this is still kind of a cumbersome model. We are in discussions right now with Zootaxa, which we're very excited about because I don't know if you can read this, but they've published 10,000 taxa since 2001. So the volume of new species descriptions that is coming out of Zootaxa is quite high, which means that having the journal do the markup might not be a sustainable model. So one thing that they've suggested is developing a software tool where the authors, as they're preparing the manuscript, fill out a template and that markup is there in the template. So that's one possibility. The problem with that, and yesterday Lubo and I discussed this, is that as the journal is processing, sending it out for review, editing it, changing it, you have to maintain that markup somehow. So that gets a little bit tricky. Another possibility is that we could take the text extraction that I mentioned briefly before with the Biodiversity Heritage Library. This would be a machine automated way to pull out information from the paper. You could also use it to add the markup in the paper and basically have the computers do all the work. Now, it sounds great in theory. There are a lot of computer scientists working on this problem, and we may get there eventually, and we really do hope to invest the time into doing this. Okay. The other way, which I think is probably in line with what some others in the symposium will be talking about, is to streamline the whole process and have the scientists, instead of building a database which may be stuck on their own laptop, have them work online from the very start and use some of the tools that are becoming available to structure their information. Scratchpads is a product out of Europe, the EDIT project. LepTree is the project that I've worked on with Charlie Mitter and others for Lepidoptera. And LifeDesk is the product that EOL is starting to develop and will be releasing in the next year. And the idea is that any of these tools could produce data already marked up and accessible on the web already. And then, in order to have a scholarly peer-reviewed publication, perhaps we could take advantage of this curator network, or perhaps the publishers could take the responsibility of assigning reviewers and actually putting the stamp of peer-reviewed approval on each page. That's all up in the air. I think that's definitely open for discussion. The problem with this model is that it really requires the most cultural change. So I think the change is coming. We're already seeing people more and more willing to use these kinds of online tools and to have their information appear online. But the culture of the promotions committees or the institutional committees to accept those as peer-reviewed publications is also going to need to change. So my argument is that we have many different ways to assemble the information for online distribution. And working with publishers in the short term, right now, immediately, is the best way to begin that process of change. It requires only convincing a few key people and a few organizations to accomplish the technological work necessary. But the future probably does hold a model of this more streamed online workflow, and the role of publishers and journals in that is, I think, a really good issue and one we can discuss. So just real quick, these are opportunities that any of you can get involved with in Encyclopedia of Life. Obviously, we are hoping for people to step forward as curators. We've already had a lot of people do that. We are starting a fellows program where we will fund the partial salaries of people to work to get content online. That should, in the next year, go global, and we'll issue calls for that. And then finally, we do have a booth here at ESA. The Biodiversity Synthesis Center is funding workshops to bring communities together to talk about what they need to do to bring the information that they already know about or that they need to find out into the Encyclopedia of Life. And we couldn't do any of this without the assistance of our cornerstone institutions. This is where most of our staff are housed. We have a whole set, a growing set every day of the content partners who are providing data for us, and then, of course, our funders. Thanks.